And they would like buttonhole you. And there was this one guy named Joe from New York, and he was real obnoxious. And couldn't stand him. But I couldn't pull off the charade, of course, of taking a one-year token, because I was obviously a basket case. So, and I remember, I even worked my butt off of writing a fourth step, but I wrote a real long, convoluted fourth step, which all it talked about was how complicated I was. And I did a fifth step with a sponsor, quote-unquote sponsor, but it was a very empty experience. He was the kind of guy who had nothing to say afterwards. He just took me to the car and said goodbye. It was almost like doing a fifth step with my father. You know? I have never been mechanical. My sponsor, Ray, can vouch for that. I can't even, I have no, zero mechanical skills. And and I would be trying to do that, and it was just horrible. But I, when I got out, I was told that I needed to go to meetings every single day, but I had in my head, well, I'll go to Mexico. Now, what I need is a change of scenery. I need a wild adventure. So, I had a person who helped got me started with going down into the interior of Mexico, where you start, you know, living with the locals down there. I was on a manic high, came back, and then it got worse and worse. And then my behavior became spastic. I would start doing spastic type stuff, embarrassing type stuff. And then I would go, and then I had this thing where I would drone on and on and on about talking at a party, and I'd be talking on and on about one specific subject, and everybody would just be going, like, talking about LSU football, and I didn't even like LSU football all night long. But anyway, it got worse and worse, and things got worse, and I'm not going to go any more into how bad things got, but I just wanted to read from page 151 of A Vision for You. Bill Wilson describes this better than I could ever. He is four horsemen: terror, bewilderment, frustration, despair. I cannot tell you how it happened or why it happened, but on January the 26th, on a Saturday night, 1992, I was at one of my favorite sordid bars, and I was with some sordid friends, and I had a beer, and I was about to start drinking it, and then all of a sudden, I found myself scooting the beer away. I can tell you exactly where I was, who I was with. I can even tell you which song it was by Axl Rose, which was they were doing karaoke to at the time. And all of a sudden, you know, I was just going to start being honest from there on out. And I cannot describe to you the details, or I cannot be graphic about the surrender experience. All I can tell you is I believe that it was God. I believe that it was a miracle. Now, I'm going to talk about my early recovery. And again, I do this with caution, because my early recovery was slow, and it was circuitous, and it was pretty shaky. But I just want to, before I tell you about this, let me just tell you, you newcomers, there were several of you here. It doesn't have to be this way for you. Okay? Talking, it turned out he knew my brother John. He knew my brother John in his employment. My brother John, bless his heart, worked as a bellboy in this hotel that he worked at. And he knew my brother John. And we started talking. And I tell you what, if this encounter had happened any other time, it probably would have gone nowhere. But all of a sudden, I felt this fantastic AA connection. And he became my sponsor. And that night, me and him went and had coffee with another guy I knew from AA. And that was the beginning of it all for me. It was three of us in AA having a camaraderie. And I tell you, I felt a connection. I felt a heartfelt going on. You've already gone to church. You've already had gotten together with friends. So there's really a time maybe to go to your apartment, to chill out. Well, I'd be a basket case. Indecisiveness. I couldn't decide what to do. I couldn't decide whether to go to the beach, to go to a movie, to go visit a woman, to go possibly to the office, go to F Street Bookstore. I couldn't decide what to do. And I would get in my car and I would drive all over the place. And I couldn't decide where to go. And then I'd end up coming back just exhausted. Well, anyway, I had the greatest fun. And then I'd sign that. Oh, God. 2 weeks without worrying. It was fantastic. I had the greatest sponsor. But I still had difficulty. One time I said, I don't feel anything. I don't feel. He goes, they would touch my forehead, then touch down here. Twain, that's going to be the longest journey you'll ever take, but you'll take it real soon. And sure enough, I did. I finally prayed to God, and I got so mad at God because I was never able to feel. I was never able to cry. Got mad at God. And then I broke down. I fell down on my... And then in the morning when I woke up, it was so sweet. I mean, it was so sweet. To this day, it touched me. She would have a Bloody Mary for me. And she would actually... She would actually be very nurturing and sweet. And I know this is strange, but I don't believe she was an alcoholic. I don't believe she was an alcoholic. I don't really know. But that's... And then later on... and I remember having conversations with my father. He would fix me drinks, and we talk. It wouldn't be a heartfelt conversation, but at least there would be talking. And they were very supportive and nutty, but it was very rare. It was very rare. And of course, blackout after blackout after blackout, then marijuana. When I graduated, I was so stoned and so drunk. When it came time to graduate and work, I was too stoned and drunk to go to work. So I had a nice father as far as he would provide, and he would pay for your education, and he would pay for you to go to grad school. So it just got worse and worse, the drinking and the marijuana, When I finally graduated from law school, I worked in a law office that one of my for winning jury trials, and I owe that to the fact that I was so competitive. I wanted to win at any cost, and I wanted some recognition, and I worked my butt off, and I cheated. And I just won and won and won. But I was very depressed and very unhappy. One night I got stopped by a police officer and was arrested. And it was kind of ironic because it really was one of the rare evenings when I don't think I was drunk. I had been drinking, but I wasn't drunk. He was going to call 20 witnesses to testify that I always drove like that, and I was always like that. Okay. Anyway, he got dismissed. The blood level wasn't high enough. Thank God. Sitting through that, I would think would have been worse than the belt whippings. Probably not, but they would have been bad. The drinking got worse and worse, and I always longed to get away from Shreveport, Louisiana, and I wanted to get as far away from there as possible. So finally, I landed a job with the Real Good Law Office out here. And my brother John was paranoid schizophrenic, but he had a period where before coming out here that he was very active in AA in Shreveport, Louisiana, and he actually invited me to one of his first year birthday party, and I got introduced to AA through him, and he was great. Y'all would love him. He was really funny. He was so cool. And I had a favorable impression of AA. When I came out here, he came out and moved with me. And when we would have parties in my apartment, everybody doing drugs and alcohol, he'd be sitting on the couch reading from the Big Book out loud. And everybody was just... They would, like, buttonhole you. And there was this one guy named Joe from New York, and he was real obnoxious. And couldn't stand him. But I couldn't pull off the charade, of course, of taking a one-year token because I was obviously a basket case. So I even worked my butt off on writing a fourth step, but I wrote a real long, convoluted fourth step, which all it talked about was how complicated I was. And I did a fifth step with a sponsor, quote-unquote sponsor, but it was a very empty experience. He was the kind of guy who had nothing to say afterwards. He just took me to the car and said goodbye. It was almost like doing a fifth step with my father. You know? Yeah. But anyway, I would talk to him on the telephone, and I'd be telling him on the telephone how great sobriety was when I'd have a cocktail. You know, I'd be cupping the phone so he couldn't hear the ice in the cocktail. I'd be cupping the phone so he couldn't hear me, you know, token. But anyway, everything just went bad to worse, and I ended up having a breakdown, and I was from exhaustion, so much drinking and using, and so much depression, and I had to go into the Mesa Vista Hospital. I went into for depression, but it was really for everything, and I remember doing those ceramic duckies, you know, and doing those moccasin belts and stuff. And I have never been mechanical. My sponsee, Ray, can vouch for that. I have zero mechanical skills. And I would be trying to do that, and it was just horrible. But when I got out, I was told that I needed to go to meetings every single day. But I had in my head, well, I'll go to Mexico. Now, what I need is a change of scenery. I need a wild adventure. So I had a person who helped got me started with going down into the interior of Mexico, where you start, you know, living with a family down there, learn to speak Spanish and all that. But I was a basket case. And so one day I'd say, yeah, I'm going to go to Mexico. And next day I'd say, no, I'm not going to go to Mexico. Oh, next day, and then I'd be calling her every day. I changed my mind. Yes, I will go. And for about 10 days, you know. But then, so to this day, that the portion in the Big Book, Taking a Trip, Not Taking a Trip, it's my favorite quote in the book. I have it as my bumper sticker on my car. Anyway, after 6 months of being down in Mexico and drinking and using, and of course you can get all the pharmaceuticals down there, I was on a manic high, came back, and then it got worse and worse. And then my behavior became spastic. I would start doing spastic type stuff. Embarrassing type stuff, and then I would go, and then I had this thing where I would drone on and on and on about talking at a party, and I'd be talking on and on about one specific subject, and everybody would just be going, like talking about LSU football, and I didn't even like LSU football all night long. But anyway, it got worse and worse, and things got worse, and I'm not going to go any more into how bad things got, but I just wanted to read. From page 151 of A Vision for You, Bill Wilson describes this better than I could ever describe it. I was, all my friends were leaving me. I was all alone. the less people tolerated us, the more we withdrew from society, from life itself. As we became subjects of alcohol, shivering denizens of his mad realm, the chilling vapor that is loneliness settled down. It thickened, ever becoming blacker. Some of us sought out sordid places, hoping to find understanding, companionship, and approval. Well, actually, I went to sordid places because it was the only place I could go. I wasn't asked looking for approval. You know. But anyway, momentarily we did. Then would come oblivion and the awful awakening to face the hideous four horsemen: terror, bewilderment, frustration, despair. I cannot tell you how it happened or why it happened, but on January the 26th, on a Saturday night, 1992, I was at one of my favorite sordid bars, and I was with some sordid friends, and I had a beer, and I was about to start drinking it, and then all of a sudden, I found myself scooting the beer away. I can tell you exactly where I was, who I was with. I can even tell you which song it was by Axl Rose, which was they were doing karaoke to at the time. And all of a sudden, I felt surrender. And I just felt like it was all lifted. And I don't know. And I knew that I was never, ever going to drink again. And I say that with caution, because I know that it's a daily program dependent on our fit spiritual condition. But I knew that I was never, ever going to drink again. And I made a commitment. I made a covenant to myself, and I think to God, that from there on out, I was going to be honest. I was no longer going to take... I was going to start announcing myself as a newcomer. I was no longer going to take 30-day tokens when I was, I was just going to start being honest from there on out. And I cannot describe to you the details, or I cannot be graphic about the surrender experience. All I can tell you is I believe that it was God. I believe that it was a miracle. Now, I'm going to talk about my early recovery. And again, I do this with caution because my early recovery was slow and it was circuitous and it was pretty shaky. But I just want to, before I tell you about this, let me just tell you, you newcomers, there were several of you here. It doesn't have to be this way for you, okay? But I had difficulty. I worked the steps. I worked them hard. I wrote my butt off on the fourth step. I did all my steps. And I am so sorry. I have to backtrack for a second. No. The night after that surrender experience, I was at a get-together, and there were a lot of recovering alcoholics there. And somebody overheard me talking, and they said, "Do I know you?" And I go, and this is the night after that surrender experience. And I go, "I don't know. I don't think so." He goes, "You sure do sound familiar." Well, and then we got to talk, and it turned out he knew my brother John. He knew my brother John in his employment. My brother John, bless his heart, worked as a bellboy in this hotel that he worked at. And he knew my brother John. And we started talking. And I tell you what, if this encounter had happened any other time, it probably would have gone nowhere. But all of a sudden, I felt this fantastic AA connection. And he became my sponsor. And that night, me and him went and had coffee with another guy I knew from AA. And that was the beginning of it all for me. It was three of us in AA having a camaraderie. And I tell you, I felt a connection. I felt a heartfelt connection with these guys. And I knew that another reason why I was never going to drink again was I would never want to let them down. And I love these guys to this day. And we're still a trio. We And David became my sponsor, and he was a great sponsor. I needed a great sponsor. I needed a nurturing sponsor. A Nazi sponsor would not have worked for me. I needed somebody who I could talk to a lot. I mean, I worked my butt off on all the steps. I really did. I'm not going to go through them all because all I can tell you is I worked my butt off, and I really, really, really did. But I was a basket case. About 3 months into it, on a Sunday afternoon, you know, when there's not really any AA meetings going on, you've already gone to church, you've already gotten together with friends, so there's really a time maybe to go to your apartment to chill out. Well, I'd be a basket case. I mean, a basket case. Indecisiveness. I couldn't decide what to do. I couldn't decide whether to go to the beach, to go to a movie, to go visit a woman, to go possibly to the office, go to F Street Bookstore. I couldn't decide what to do. And I would get in my car and I would drive all over the place, and I couldn't decide where to go. And I'd end up coming back just exhausted. Well, anyway, I had the greatest sponsor. He would start telling me, "Twain, just pick one. It doesn't matter. It's no big deal." And so then I realized that 5 minutes after you pick it, you're going to change your mind. But just pat yourself on the back and just tell yourself, "Twain, that's just you being Twain. And just stick with it. It's no big deal." It saved my life. And he... worry. I would obsess. Worry. Just could not stop worrying. Finally, he taught me, "Twain, here, let's just write out on a piece of paper to myself, 'Twain, I give yourself permission to take a 2-week vacation from worry.'" And then I signed that. Oh, God! 2 weeks without worrying! It was fantastic. I had the greatest sponsor. But I still had difficulty. One time I said, I don't feel anything. I don't feel. He goes, they would touch my forehead and then touch down here. "Twain, that's going to be the longest journey you'll ever take, but you'll take it real soon." And sure enough, I did. I finally prayed to God, and I got so mad at God because I was never able to feel. I was never able to cry. Got mad at God. And then I broke down. I fell down on my carpet in my apartment and cried like a banshee. That's early recovery. And I still had some difficult times. I tended to think that I was different from y'all. I thought that I was more complicated than you. I thought that I was more, I thought that I was smarter than you. I thought that I needed cutting edge AA. Yeah. So I would spend most of my time, a lot of times I'd go to meetings and I wouldn't listen unless they were talking about some really deep metaphysical spiritual stuff, you know? And then I went to a New Age church, which was good. It was a good church for me. But I did New Age church. I attended all these workshops, psychiatry, therapy, group therapy. I did all these workshops, and it was all great. But it was exhausting, and I would end up not going to as many meetings as I should. And I just felt like I was so serious and so complicated that I needed this. And it was, maybe I did need it at the time, and I don't regret that I went through all that, because it was all a very long and winding road. But it was, I finally was able to come to a point where I let go of that. Well, partly it helped because my therapist moved. And my psychiatrist moved. And I got into a lot of trouble with in the New Age church. We do masterminding, where they teach you to pray for specific goals. Well, you know, when the big book tells you, we might not want to do that because your specific goal might not be in your best interest. Believe me, I prayed that I would be, that I would meet the woman that I would marry, and we would be married within 2 years. Well, the problem is, you know, there was nothing in that prayer about, you know, a $90,000 divorce, you know, 5 years later, you know. And in the early days, I thought that I was so, I needed to go to Spanish speaking meetings because I needed to improve my Spanish because I was cutting edge and I needed to, you know, do that. But I needed to get certified bilingual for my job, for my profession. And so I would go to Spanish speaking. And then for vacations, I would go down to the interior of Mexico and like a Mexico City and then Querétaro in the interior of Mexico to go. And I would go to AA meetings all day long every day. And it was a little bit circuitous, but there was some good to that. I learned how to cuss in Spanish. And at the meetings, I would learn to get up on that podium and go, "A que la chingada! A pizza tu madre!" You know, and it felt great. So anyway, it was rocky, but. I don't have much time left, so I need to speed up. And I apologize. I spent so little time now on talking about what it is like now. So I'm going to try to do that right now. I have finally learned that I am not more complicated than you. I am not more intelligent. You know who helped me to really realize that I'm not more complicated than you? Going to a speaker meeting and hear Anne Marie talk. But it was, no, really, I was a snob. I had been a snob. I really had been a snob. About 4 years ago, I had a real bad breakdown at work where I had so much resentment and so much anger against the system, against the people in the office, that I blew up. And it was a bad scene. I blew up bad. And I also had been letting a woman be my higher power, another one of those emotionally unavailable women, you know, that I was trying to have a relationship with. So I was, my AA was not as good as it could have been. And Laura, thank God, I heard her say something at a morning attitude adjustment meeting that morning. And I realized, I went to work and I went, I let it go. I'm going to tell everybody I'm sorry. I let it go. You know, I did. I let it go. I surrendered. And from there, and then from there on out, I started to get, I don't know what it was, but I got back to basics. Now my favorite talk at meetings is no longer the 11th step. I like the first and the second step. I do. Every time I hear them, I learn more and more about myself. And I heard a really good speaker talk about when I was drinking, using in my early recovery, I was always trying to go from A to B to Z. But now I just stay in a deeper and deeper A. And now I am proud to say that I'm not complicated. I'm only complicated when I dwell in my head that I can be a basically really good guy. And I just try to focus on the basics. And what's really has saved me is the slogans. I was, a long time ago, I got real active in Buddhism, which was really good. But I learned a lot about anecdotes and the preliminaries that they talk about. And I've come to realize that the anecdotes, the slogans which we have in AA, are exactly the same thing as the anecdotes in Buddhism. Every time I'm in a bad space, I pick a slogan which is applicable. And there's so many of them. Keep it simple. Take it easy for us. One day at a time. First foot forward. You know, there's hundreds of them. And I like them because they're simple and they're short and they work. They really do. They work. This program is simple, but it's not easy. I mean, for me, I went through a lot of mental head trips before I got here. I've always done things the hard way. I became a trial lawyer when I had a fear of public speaking. You know, I've always done things the hard way. And so I'm not going to beat myself up about that. That's just the way I did it. And I love AA. The greatest feeling in the world for me is helping a newcomer. When I got to help Ray and other newcomers, it's the greatest feeling I've ever felt in the world, helping a newcomer, being of service. And I no longer have to worry about whether or not I need a meeting or whether or not I want a meeting or whether or not a meeting would be helpful. Thank God I don't have to worry about all that. But that's a mental head trip for me. It doesn't matter. 6 months into my sobriety, I was in a bad space. My sponsor asked me, tell me the steps. I was like, I admitted I was no wrong. I had the first word wrong. Now I realize the most important word in this program is we. It doesn't matter. I'm here because y'all saved my life. I'm here to be part of. I'm here because I love being here. I'm here because somebody might help me. I'm here because my presence might help somebody. And I'm here because I'm a basket case and I need y'all. You know? But it's, I don't have, you know, it's a we program. It's family. AA is my family. AA is my family. I love AA. And I've there's a lot of stuff I didn't talk about, which I wanted to talk about my two beautiful daughters and a lot of other things. But I just want to leave with one message, and that is that I always felt separated and apart. I felt unconnected. People talked about how they could be uncomfortable in their skin. God, a lot of times I didn't even feel like I was in my body. But now I have AA, and I have people who love me, who I have a heartfelt connection with, and I love this program. I really do. And we never, ever have to be alone again.